yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a-screaming now. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show, Alternative Visions. And as I've indicated in the promo during this week, this week's show will address my predictions for the U.S. and global economy. Every year I write an article in Z Magazine, extended feature article, predicting, making a set of predictions of where the U.S. and the global economy will be going in the coming year. And today we will look at my predictions that I made last June 2013 that was published in Z Magazine in the July-August issue of 2013. If folks are interested in that, you can go to Z Magazine or you can go to my website and read the predictions at the end of the article. My website is www.kyklosproductions.com. That's KYKLOS Productions, plural, one word, .com, /articles.html. So put that in your PC, and go ahead and if you want to look at that, take a look at my predictions. But I'm going to talk about those predictions now and do a review, which have come true and which have not. And then I'm going to talk about the economy, U.S. and global, and make some predictions for the coming year. And those predictions for the coming year, by the way, will appear in another Z Magazine article here in the coming months. Okay, so let's start. Let's go and look at what the predictions are. I'm going to repeat those predictions here and provide an assessment. Did I hit them? Did I miss them? And then we will go on and do a review of the U.S. and global economy and make another set of predictions at the end of the show. Okay, here we go. Okay, first prediction made in June 2013. That the U.S. will enter a double-dip recession late 2013 or early 2014, with the proviso that U.S. policymakers will continue deficit cutting and a more severe banking crisis will erupt in Europe. So there were two provisos here, more deficit cuts, there was more reductions in government spending, and a banking crisis in Europe that would produce a recession by early 2014. Now, we all know in the first quarter of 2014, we had a major drop in GDP, didn't we? Minus 2.9%. That has since been revised to only a 2.2% drop. And you might say, well, that was only a one-quarter drop in GDP. Therefore, you need two quarters of GDP decline to constitute a recession. No. That's the common misinterpretation. In other words, two consecutive quarters of GDP contraction that the public and the press generally understands as defining a recession. Actually, recessions don't need to fall two consecutive quarters. GDP doesn't need to fall. Recessions are defined by the National Bureau of Economic Research economists. And I would point out that in 2001, they declared a recession had occurred with a much less than 2% decline in GDP in only one quarter. So it was sufficient back then to declare a recession had occurred, but they didn't declare that here this particular time, or at least not yet. Okay, so it's debatable whether a recession occurred here in the first quarter of this year with this 2.9% indication of a contraction of the economy. And as I've said before, actually that 2.9% was actually greater than 2.9% because last summer the U.S. government Bureau of Economic Analysis redefined what constitutes GDP, the elements of GDP, and added some pretty funny redefinitions of GDP, which included counting R&D expenses as investment, which is nonsense. Expenses are not investment. But nonetheless, they did that, adding about three-tenths of 1% to the U.S. GDP number. So the decline actually was about 3.2%, not 2.9, if you back out those questionable definitions, redefinitions. And there were some other revisions as well in the U.S. Method of calculating GDP. And then, of course, if you did not use the GDP deflator price index to adjust nominal GDP to get real GDP, and you use the consumer price index, it would probably be at least 3.5% or more of a contraction in the first quarter. And as we talked before, you know, folks were saying, oh, that's the weather. Well, estimates of the weather contribution last winter to this GDP decline was no more than half of 1%. So we still have about a 3% contraction that occurred at the time, certainly much more than in 2001. And, you know, it's questionable, debatable whether that should have been declared a recession or not. Okay, so as I pointed out, also GDP in the U.S. Very clearly has fallen stagnant on three different occasions, what I call economic relapses, if not double-dip recessions, a concept that I use, relapses, where GDP growth rate collapses to zero or below for at least one quarter. That happened in the first quarter of 2011, in the fourth quarter of 2012, and then again here in the first quarter of 2014. And those relapses, I argue, are evidence of U.S. Bouncing along the bottom for the last 4 years, since the official end, 5 years now, of the recession in mid-2009, a stop-go recovery in the U.S., where the growth rates are half of what is normal when the GDP is growing, and periodically we have these relapses collapsing to zero or less, three times now. Some argue, too, that this second quarter, subsequent growth rate of more than 3%, pretty much offsets the first quarter collapse. But we're going to see that the 3%, 4% growth estimate was initial estimate, and that's going to be downgraded. But it will be, nonetheless, a positive growth in the second quarter. But again, a return to this below historical average growth rate. So the U.S. economy continues on this trajectory of short, shallow recoveries, well below historical averages, punctuated periodically by these collapses of GDP to zero or less for a short, shallow period. That's bouncing along the bottom. That's what I call an epic recession for a number of years. And we see the same scenario going on in Europe, in Japan, and elsewhere, except those economies are bouncing below the bottom. They have relapses, well, actually double dip and triple dip and quadruple dip recessions going on in Europe and in Japan. Now, I'll talk about that shortly. So in other words, this stop-go is at a much lower level in Europe and Japan, and that's because Europe and Japan don't have the benefits of the U.S. in terms of a global currency and in terms of a massive military spending that periodically props up the economy and other advantages in terms of monetary policy. So their stop-go is at a lower level than the U.S., but it's stop-go everywhere, and that's the continuing global recession. So this first prediction, depends how you want to argue it. I think my prediction was not too far off, particularly since there was no severe banking crisis yet in Europe, and the U.S. Government backed off of a deficit cutting. Nonetheless, we still had that major contraction, stop-go contraction here in the first quarter, and I predict, as I will shortly, that we're going to see a further weakening in the U.S. economy going forward into next year. Okay, that was a prediction one. Now, prediction two, I hit the nail on the head here when I said last June 2013 that the Federal Reserve, central bank of the U.S., would begin reducing its $85 billion a month then liquidity injection into the banks over the next 12 months. Well, they certainly did do that. It's about to come to an end. On several steps, they reduced the $85 billion to $65 and 55, 45, et cetera, and it will soon, by the end of this year, that $85 billion QE, QE, quantitative easing, is when the central bank prints money and goes out and buys bonds and other securities from institutional and individual investors, buys up those bad bonds, those bad assets from those investors, and often at prices above market value. We don't know how much more than the market value they paid for these things, because the Fed won't reveal how much they paid for this these bonds that they're buying from private investors. It's a big subsidy deal for investors, bailing them out, including the banks. That's what QE is, and printing money to do it. And in the course of which that injects trillions and trillions of dollars into the global economy, QE, and that, of course, stimulates the financial asset markets and creates bubbles, which is, of course, new bubbles that, of course, have been the case in recent years. The U.S. has spent about $4 trillion in QE alone. And that, of course, has stimulated stock and bond market bubbles and currency bubbles, and we'll talk about that shortly. But I predicted that the Fed would significantly, within the next 12 months, unquote, reduce QE, and, of course, they really have. And this prediction said that if it continued, that it would create bubbles in the junk bond, corporate junk bond markets, and real estate investment trust markets and money market fund markets, in which, of course, it has. It has. Also contributing to these financial bubbles is not just QE, but the continued near zero interest rate policy of the Federal Reserve. That pumps even more money into the U.S. and global economy. Now, the pumping of that money does not really go into the U.S. economy. It goes through the U.S. and leaves the U.S. and goes into financial speculation and globally and in funding investments in emerging markets outside the U.S. So this $14 trillion minimum monetary injection, QE plus zero interest rates, has not produced much of a recovery, a real recovery at all in the U.S. Because the money has, the liquidity injection has flowed out. You know, banks and financial institutions borrow from the Fed at near zero interest rates. And then they take that money, and instead of loaning to mom-and-pop businesses that create jobs in the U.S., they loan it to multinational corporations expanding abroad, and to banks abroad and other investors abroad, and they too invest in the, financial markets, and they loan it to hedge funds and private equity firms for their acquisitions, and that's where all this money injection is gone. That, of course, props up the stock markets for these companies and corporate bond markets, and then these corporations pass on the huge savings from all these money injections. They pass it on to their shareholders in stock buybacks and dividend payouts. And now what they're doing is having paid out trillions of dollars in recent years in stock buybacks and dividend payouts, now what they're doing with the rest of the money is engaging in mergers and acquisitions globally. So the money goes, big money injection goes to stockholders, shareholders, particularly the big ones, really make a killing here. And now it's going into M&A, buy up your competitor, rather than investing and expanding investment in the U.S. that would create jobs and so forth. Okay, so prediction about the Fed hit the nail on the head. That was second prediction. Third prediction. of last year. There will be another round of deficit cutting late in 2013 and be associated with a revision of the U.S. tax code. Well, I missed that one, I admit it. I certainly thought they were on a road to revise the corporate tax code. As everyone knows, Obama had agreed to 28% publicly, and all the big businesses were saying we need a big tax cut because we're not competitive with our foreign competitors, which is nonsense, as I wrote in a December 2013 article, The Great Corporate Tax Shift, showing how corporations do not pay a 35% tax rate. In the U.S., they pay about 12% after all the exemptions and tax cuts and loopholes and so forth. And multinational corporations pay maybe another 2-3% offshore and barely 2% to states. So their total tax load here, effective tax rate and tax payments, are no more than 15-16% instead of the much hyped 40-50% tax rate. That's just ideology and lies. Okay. But I did miss this. Politically, I underestimated the willingness of politicians in both wings of the corporate party, a.k.a. Republicans and Democrats in this country, to get together and deliver another big benefit to their big corporate campaign contributors too soon. This is premature, I would say. I'm still not giving up on the fact that there will be big corporate tax cuts being agreed to after the November midterm elections. The politicians are a little bit cautious about giving such a big handout to these corporations who have record profits today. They're still sitting on more than $2 trillion of cash, even after they pass trillions to their shareholders in dividends and stock buybacks. There's still huge amounts of sitting on cash. That's why they're engaging in all this merger and acquisition activity. I guess it was a little difficult with that huge corporate profits to politically pass big corporate tax cuts. But you're going to see it coming, I predict, here in the next session of Congress, right, probably in 2015. All right. So premature on prediction 3 about more deficit cutting and corporate tax cutting here, but I'm not giving up on that yet. Okay. Number 4, another round of deficit cutting, Social Security and Medicare cut by $700 billion, I proposed. And, well, I looked at Obama's 2014 budget, and that's what he proposed. But I guess kind of like the corporate tax cutting, facing an election year in 2014, a lot of these congressmen and women of both parties here, both wings of the one party, were a little bit cautious about maybe taking away from grandma and grandpa while they gave big tax cuts more for corporations. So they've backed off of the temporarily, I think, of the Social Security and Medicare cuts. We're going to see Obamacare as a backdoor way of reducing healthcare spending, but that's another topic. All right, so I missed that one. Premature. Social Security and Medicare, we're not being cut. Number 5, the much touted current housing recovery will stall. And that's exactly what happened in late 2013-14. Most of this, quote, recovery in housing in the U.S., really driven by foreign investments and institutional investors, hedge funds and others, buying up big blocks of the empty homes that have been foreclosed and so forth. That's what we got the recovery. And the recovery of housing was really located in the very deep decline sectors of the economy, like in Phoenix and Nevada and places like that, where prices were very low, and these institutional investors, foreign investors often, jumped into the market, bought up these vacant homes, and then as prices partially rose, they dumped them. And that recovery is over. over. I mean, the best signal of the fact the housing recovery is over is all the big banks, Wells, and so forth, laying off their staff, their housing market staff. So that's a signal that, you know, housing recovery is over. And institutional speculators have taken their profits and moved on to another bubble somewhere else. So it's going to bounce along the bottom. So a partial recovery of housing, but no more. Now, that doesn't mean that building companies aren't building new houses. They are building houses, but that doesn't add anything to GDP until they actually sell these things. But there is building in anticipation of a growing possibility of a housing recovery. But I don't think that recovery is going to come. But builders, construction, you know, they often do this while cost of materials are very low, and they hope to sell these new homes in the future. And they're mostly high-end new construction in any event. Okay, so I think I hit that one about the housing recovery stalling. It has, more or less. Pretty much. Prediction 6, manufacturing and U.S. exports will slow still further, drift in and out of negative growth as the global economy and world trade continues to contract further. Well, that's been pretty much accurate. We've had some months where exports and manufacturing have grown, and others where it has slowed down. And, of course, the bouncing up and down has a lot to do with currency declines elsewhere in the world, and when the U.S. Currency falls relative to the others, exports rise and manufacturing follows, and vice versa. When other currencies, the pound, the euro, and so forth, decline, the U.S. dollar rises and exports slow and so forth. Okay? And this is notwithstanding the fact that the U.S. is now exporting oil and gas for the first time. Actually, that whole shale boom and oil boom, which is really bigger than the shale boom in the U.S., is not benefiting the U.S. except in certain regions of the country where it's actually occurring. So the benefits may come to GDP, but not really to the folks in most of the country. Okay, prediction 7. There will be no sustained recovery of jobs over the coming year. Okay, I missed that one. There has been job creation recovery, but, as I've been saying, it's almost totally low-wage, contingent, part-time, temporary jobs with low wages and virtually no benefits. The jobs being replaced are low-paid jobs, low-paid, no-benefit jobs, replacing the loss of higher-paid jobs. Full-time jobs. We have a churning out here of loss of full-time jobs and replacing of those with low-paid jobs. Okay, but the government says those are job creations. Well, but the low pay means that the wage recovery is not occurring, and that's pretty obvious because for the last 5 years, median wages and income have declined 1 to 2% per year. So even though you got wage growth, job growth, you don't have wage growth. Okay, but they are jobs, but they're low-quality jobs. And they don't bother to mention the fact that even though we've had job growth, we still have millions of people leaving the labor force at the same time. You know, about as many people left the labor force or didn't enter it as we've created jobs. So it's a churning of not only full-time for part-time, but a churning of people leaving the labor force and people entering the labor force. And that's why the Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen is still focusing very much on jobs and the fact that we don't really have a true jobs recovery going on. Okay, prediction 8. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would be concluded but would not pass the Senate until 2017. I missed that. The TPP, as it's called, NAFTA on steroids, as I've called it, that has stalled somewhat. Why has it stalled? It was on a fast track there for a while. Well, for several reasons. One, we had a growing crisis in emerging markets in 2013. which has stabilized somewhat. But nonetheless, that threw a wrench into the negotiations. And then Japan and China started raising their own demands with regard to this TPP, which further complicated the negotiations. And then the World Trade Organization had its own negotiations going on. The TPP would undermine the WTO. So a lot of confusion with regard to free trade negotiations here with the TPP that have stalled it. I believe the TPP will eventually go through. Both wings of the corporate party want it very much, and there's not that much real opposition to it within Congress and the labor movement. FLCO is kind of thrown in the towel on resisting that. In word only, they talk about it, but unlike their resistance to NAFTA, there's not much going on there. Okay. Number nine, with regard to the global economy, Eurozone debt crisis will worsen and the banking system will grow more unstable. Yes, the banking system is growing more unstable in Europe. And then I predict that austerity policy in Europe will focus more on wage and benefit compression. Yes, that happened. I hit that nail on the head. That's what's going on. You know, austerity can take a number of forms. It can take the form of reducing government spending on social programs, right? It can take the form of government selling off public investments and public goods, and that's the form it had taken up to now. But it can also take the form of compressing wages and benefits directly, and sometimes called labor market reform. Reduce pensions, reduce wages, and so forth, lower the cost of goods in the countries in which that occurs, and therefore make those exports of those countries much more competitive. You may have heard that, Spain is recovering because of exports. Well, that's primarily because they've compressed wages. You know, with a depression going on in Spain, wages have fallen through the floor, which has made Spain exports more competitive, stimulating exports, which all means that recovery, where it has occurred in Europe, in this or that country, has been on the backs of the working class, right? This is a kind of devaluation. Instead of formally devaluing your currency, which, of course, they can't do in Spain because it's the euro-wide currency, but they can, quote, de facto devalue by compressing wage costs and labor costs. And that's what they're doing in Europe. And Spain will now become the model for further austerity, the primary focus of further austerity going forward in Europe, instead of just cutting social spending and selling off private goods and public goods and investment. Okay, so I believe I hit number nine there, that the banking system will grow more unstable and austerity focus on wages. That's happening. The banking system, by the way, is growing more unstable in Europe. We see problems with the Portuguese Banco Espírito Santo Bank, which is now spreading to France. Bulgarian banks, the Austrian banks, Italian banks are in very fragile shape and only sort of bailed out here because of the IMF policies in Ukraine. As you may have heard, we'll talk more about it. The IMF have provided this spring a bailout of $18 billion of the Ukraine. $6 billion that immediately went to Austrian, Italian, and Western Europe banks for previous payments on bailouts before in the Ukraine. So, you know, take $6 billion out of that $18 billion, and we'll talk about Ukraine a little bit more and its effect on Europe. Okay, and so the banking system is growing more unstable in Europe, particularly in the periphery, and even in France. And Italy and Austria and Eastern Europe, and will grow even more unstable. Okay. Number 10 prediction. More economies in the Eurozone will slip into recession. France's recession will deepen. Yes. Well, exactly. Boy, I hit that one on the head, too. First half of this year, zero growth. Zero growth in the EU. And even Germany, now negative growth. France, of course, has been negative. Well, they say that there's been stagnant, but the French are doing everything they can to make it appear as if their economy is not as bad off as it is. But, you know, Germany and Italy both negative in the second quarter and no growth in the first quarter for the Eurozone in general. And France, of course, is the sick sister of the Eurozone and will lead the northern tier into a further slowdown. Okay. I also predicted the UK will vote to leave the European Union. Well, that was premature, but I still think it's going to happen. I still think the UK, under Cameron, their prime minister, will vote to leave the European Union. And that's because Cameron, above all, will protect the London banks. Those are his big buddies. And he'll do everything he can to protect them from regulations and competition from the banks in Germany and elsewhere. And that will require him to vote to leave the European Union. I think he hasn't voted to do that or pressed that vote here in the past year because of what's going on with the Scotland referendum to leave the UK, United Kingdom. You know, I mean, if he pushes, well, let's leave Europe, that kind of gives impetus to the Scotland vote that's coming up. Well, let's leave the UK itself, right? So I think that's the big reason why that hasn't been pushed more aggressively by Cameron and the Conservatives in the UK. But it will be eventually here because the banks are all that the UK really has left in terms of significant industry. Okay, so I think I've, notwithstanding the UK voting to leave the Union, I think I've hit the European economy slipping into a bona fide recession was really accurate prediction here. Just as their banking system and austerity were accurate predictions. Okay, prediction 11, China's growth rate will drift lower. Yes, it has. Well, 7.5%, actually it's lower than that in real terms here because of the way they calculate GDP. It's probably around 6.5%. It used to be 12, 14% at the peak. So a definite slowdown in China. And it will be forced to devalue its currency. Yes, the previous policy of China was to allow its currency, the yuan, renminbi, to drift upwards, which it did. But as its economy slowed, it has reversed that policy and has allowed it to drift downward once again. Okay, I had predicted this would set off a currency war globally, but it has not. So I missed the global currency intensification. But I was accurate on the growth rate drifting lower and the devaluing of the currency, right? Prediction 12, global trade will continue to decline. Yes, it has. So that was on mark. 13, Japan's risky experiment with massive QE and modest fiscal stimulus will prove disastrous and lead to more speculative excess and financial instability in Japan and financial asset markets that would benefit in the short run, in other words, stock and bond markets, but not the rest of the economy in Japan. Well, that has proved right on as well. Okay, Japan introduced a massive quantitative easing equivalent to the U.S., given the size of its economy, provided a little bit of fiscal stimulus, and then, with the other hand, recently took away the fiscal stimulus with a sales tax hike. So really, fiscal austerity, when you net out the fiscal effects, combined with a massive monetary liquidity injection and QE, and that resulted initially in a huge run-up in the stock market and bond markets in Japan. You know, bondholders and speculators made a bundle in Japan. But it soon came to a halt, right? It played itself out, and the Japanese economy is no longer any larger a year later after this than it was a year before. The Japanese GDP collapsed by 6.8% in the second quarter, and Japan, as I predicted elsewhere, is now entering its fourth recession since 2009. Fourth recession, a quadruple dip in Japan. just as Europe is entering its third recession, its triple dip, the Eurozone at least, since 2009. So these other capitalist economies, sectors, you know, Japan and Europe, the other two major advanced economy capitalist sectors, are really experiencing multiple dip recessions, multiple dip going on. The U.S. is experiencing multiple relapses because it has certain economic global advantages, its currency and so forth. Defense spending, that these other major sectors of the capitalist economy do not have. They do not have those same advantages, so they are experiencing multiple dips, short, shallow recoveries followed by multiple dips, i.e. what I call epic recession in my 2010 book, Epic Recession, Prelude to Global Depression. And by the way, I am writing a sequel to that called Transitions to Global Depression that will be published next year. Okay. So capitalist economies, prediction 14, will converge around QE monetary policies. In other words, monetary policy, QE, will be their primary policy response to the global slowdown. And, quote, a more focused attack on workers' wages and social benefits. Well, that's what's happened. We see globally the capitalist economies have preferred to use monetary policy to try to re-stimulate the economy. But it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked because all those huge monetary liquidity injections by the U.S. Federal Reserve, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, and the ECB, European Central Bank, have had the effect of flowing out of the advanced economies to higher profit opportunities in emerging markets in China initially, and also into financial asset market speculation worldwide. Little of it has stayed in those economies to really invest, to stimulate investment, very little. I recently wrote an article on the slowing real investment picture in the U.S., which you can also take a look at on my website if you're interested in this question of investment, why real investment is slowing at the same time speculation, money capital is flowing into financial assets, and initially flowed as well into emerging markets in China, but now that is slowing down. That article is called On the Causes of Investment Decline in the U.S. Economy, a reply to Hartman Wolf. Okay, that's also on my keyclosproductions.com/articles.html website if you want to read that particular economy. But this is a global phenomenon that's occurring. You know, primarily, let's stimulate the global economy through money injections, which, of course, has the immediate effect of stimulating financial markets and bailing out big investors and banks and big capitalists immediately to record levels. Profits have never been any higher. Income of 1% has never been any greater. It's continuing to grow because it's this money infusion goes directly through the banks, right to the top of these investors, but it doesn't stimulate real jobs that would create wages and incomes for the rest. So we have stagnant consumption going on while the wealthy get super wealthy at the same time. And this big growing chasm between income growth at the top and the bottom. Well, that's because of the monetary policies, the free money, the QE, the free interest rates, that the money goes right into financial asset markets that these investors, you know, junk bond markets, stock markets, money markets, real estate markets, and so forth. And that's the phenomenon of global capital in the 21st century. A liberal economist, you know, you listen to them and they kind of debate, well, why is, you know, all this austerity, fiscal policy? You know, all you need to do is stimulate the, you know, government spending. And just recently, of course, we had another round of liberal economists, Joseph Stiglitz and others, chastising Europe. Why are you continuing your austerity? Are you crazy? You know? And they don't quite understand that that's what the capitalists prefer. Look, they prefer to bail themselves out first with massive money injections and to hope and wait for the rest of the economy to recover. I mean, it's not even trickle down anymore. It's drip, drip down. And, you know, it's taking a long time for the drip, drip to have any effect, and still hasn't, on the rest of us who work for wages for a living. It's just not getting down there. That's a big change in 21st century finance capital. It's not getting down to the rest of the economy, and we don't see a recovery, but the capitalists prefer that. Let's bail ourselves out, and let's hope eventually, we don't care how long it takes to bail people out in the drip-drip economy, but now we're doing good. Let's just wait. In the meantime, you know, let's not let these government deficits get out of hand because we got slow growth, and therefore tax revenues collapse, and therefore deficits occur. Let's hold the line on those deficits as they continue by, reducing government spending and so forth. Right? That's why fiscal policy is austerity in some shade or degree, differs in different countries, more severe in Europe. Right? But it's going on in Japan. As I said, you know, their policy, Abenomics, their Prime Minister Abe, right? It's called Abenomics, recently did what? Well, big QE, as I said, and secondarily a little government spending, but we're going to take that back with a sales tax increase. Well, the impact of the sales tax was much greater on consumption than the government spending stimulus was. So it was a net austerity program in a different form. You know, the Europeans didn't do a sales tax increase. They just cut government investments and government spending on social programs, especially in the periphery. Well, you know, Japan's got a different form of their austerity, and we have a different form here in the U.S. as well. You know, we've been cutting education and cutting some of these other programs in 2011 and 2012. But then, you know, the politicians back off during election year in 2012, and they're backed off this year in 2014. They're very clever. They want to get reelected more than anything, so you know, they don't intensify it. Plus, the U.S. has much more in ammunition in its rifle, economic rifle here, with regard to monetary policy and defense spending and so forth. So they don't have to deficit cut as deeply, and they can engage because the dollar is global currency and even more massive monetary stimulus. So the policy, you know, across the leading capitalist sectors has always been focused more on monetary injection, liquidity injection, and hope the rest of the economy eventually comes along. We don't care how long it takes. And, you know, let's have some austerity to keep the lid on government debt and deficits as the slow recovery occurs. Okay. So, you know, to summarize, looking at my predictions here, last year, double dip recession 2014, debatable, depending on how you want to define that, right? Fed reducing QE, hit that one on the head. More deficit cutting and corporate tax cuts, premature. Okay. Social Security medical spending cuts $7 billion, premature, right? Housing recovery will stall, hit that. Manufacturing and exports will slow, in and out of negative growth as global economy, world trade contract, yes. No sustained recovery for jobs over the coming year. Well, if you count jobs as just a headcount, we have had some recovery, but if you look at the quality of jobs at low wage and so forth, and the fact that as many have left the labor force as have come in, then no sustained recovery. You know, you just can't look at a headcount, a job. You've got to look at what kind of job and the income it produces, and you got to look at all those millions of people who have left the labor force. So there's really no recovery in jobs. It's a churning in jobs. Free trade TPP, I predicted would happen. It hasn't yet for reasons I said, so missed that. Eurozone, debt and banking crisis and austerity policy focusing on wages, yes. Eurozone slipping into recession, France, particular deepen, yes. UK will vote to leave the European Union, no, because of Scotland. China's rate will drift lower and devalue its currency. Yes. Global currency war intensified. No. Global trade decline. Yes. Japan's massive QE proved disastrous except for financial asset markets. Yes. And capitalist economies converging around QE monetary policies and all beginning to focus their tax more on workers' wages and social benefits. Yes. Okay. So, missed some. I think I hit more than I missed. But nonetheless, you know, I did miss a few of these, but I think I was on more so in the more important developments. Okay. So, what about for the future here? Where are these things going? What would be my predictions for the coming year? Well, don't have time really to give you an update review of where I think the major sectors of the global economy are. Europe, right? As I mentioned, Germany flat, Europe slowing, southern periphery, Spain, Portugal recovering a little bit, but that's because of export growth and that's because of wage compression there. Italy getting worse, Greece remaining stagnant, East Europe weakening, due particularly because of the situation in Ukraine and Russia and sanctions and so forth. I had predicted earlier this year, as the Ukraine situation exploded, that a deal would be reached. When everyone thought Putin was going to invade, I said, nope, he's not going to invade, because he's more concerned about the where Europe is going and the U.S. trying to exploit its coup that it set off in the Ukraine as a part of a new policy to drag Europe back into the U.S. orbit more firmly, because Europe had been, particularly Germany, drifting towards, economically, towards more of a relationship with Russia. So I think all of this situation in Ukraine is about the future of Europe. In fact, I wrote an article, Putin, Ukraine, and the Future of Europe. That's also on my website if you want to read my prediction last spring, that when everyone was saying he would invade, that no, he was not going to invade. And also a series of three articles that I also wrote in the spring, which predicted that Ukraine would slip into a major depression, Greece-like depression, as a result of the IMF policies. I had predicted a 10 to 15% GDP drop, which it looks like it may exceed, and $50 billion, not $18 billion, needed to bail it out, and a currency collapse. Which has fallen, the Ukraine currency has already fallen 60% to the dollar. So those, I also predicted sanctions would not affect the Russian economy all that much, and it would affect the European economy just as much. And, of course, we're seeing that happen now in Eastern Europe, particularly and Germany, significantly impacted by the Ukraine crisis and the sanctions, and that will push Europe even more into recession. I predicted austerity would continue, focusing more now on, quote, labor market restructuring, which is a code word for reducing wages still more. The Spain model will be the model for austerity in the Eurozone going forward, I think. Growing banking instability, I had already mentioned, you know, the Portugal bank, BES, Italian, Austrian banks, Bulgarian banks, Crédit Agricole in France, right? All of these will greater evidence of instability in the banking system coming in Europe. Okay. Let's see, predictions. Well, I think there's a 50-50 chance Scotland will vote to leave, but you'll see some massive concessions at the last minute given by Cameron and the UK to try to keep him there. You know, what will be the impact on other secessionist movements elsewhere in Europe, in Catalonia and Venice and so forth? And by the way, if they can leave, why all the big stink about Donetsk and Lugansk not going independent? You know, it's okay in Western Europe, but it's not in the Ukraine, right? Kind of a dual attitude here. I would predict, too, that the way France is going, that François Hollande here, the president, may face the elections even before 2017. Hollande is a disaster. Hollande is the Jimmy Carter of France. Economic policy is absolutely disastrous. Can't figure out which way he wants to go, and as a result, his troubles, he's coming hat in hand to the U.S. saying, well, whatever you want us to do on foreign policy and to Israel, we're glad to do. Just help us, bail us out, you know. France has become an appendage of U.S. policy here. Okay, so let me jump to some predictions here before we run out of time. I don't really have time to review the global economy, but I will be doing so in another article and probably on another show here in the coming weeks. Let me just jump then to what I see as the predictions for the coming year. And as I said, I will write something in addition to that, in addition to what I'll be saying verbally here, so people can get a clear, specific picture of my predictions. Okay. Prediction one, USA economy will continue to bounce along the bottom at less than 2% growth, actually closer to 1.5%, 1% growth. This has been going on for 5 years. We may see relapses once again. The recovery in retail is really debt-driven and auto-driven, discount-driven. It's not really driven by a real disposable income rising for median families, which is actually dropping 1% to 2% per year. Okay, so until you get real income-driven consumption, which is 70% of the economy, you're not going to get a real sustained economic recovery. Right? Housing is not going to lead the economy forward here. Doesn't matter what you get from month to month. Business investment, periodically, several times now, we've seen business build up its inventories in expectation of consumption surge, which hasn't happened, and then we get a big retreat of those inventories. And the same thing, we get a yo-yo effect with manufacturing and exports, right? So the picture is in consumption and housing and business inventories and investment and exports up and down at a below historic average rate. Second prediction. U.S. Fed, the Federal Reserve Central Bank, won't raise interest rates before mid-2015. Okay, that means that these bubbles that have been brewing in the stocks and junk bonds and M&A and leverage buyouts will continue. And when they do bust, the impact on the economy will even be more severe. Okay, more negative impact when rates do finally rise. They will rise, and we will see that the impact on the economy will be much more severe than economists believe. I believe there will be corporate tax cuts coming after the November elections. Eurozone will continue to weaken still further. Deflation, actual deflation, which is now about a zero growth of prices, will actually begin to occur in 2015 in the Eurozone. The ECB, European Central Bank, will introduce a QE-like policy. You know, it's been sort of a QE with its LTRO, long-term refinancing option program, but it will go true QE here pretty soon, okay, sometime next year. Wage compression will become the preferred policy in Europe to stimulate exports. The Ukraine depression will drag on and will drag Eastern Europe into slower growth, and Germany as well. There will be a deal struck, I believe, between Europe, particularly Merkel and Putin in Russia, over the Ukraine. Okay? The negative impacts of all this are too severe now for Europe, and Europe will pull away from the U.S. Demand that you hold the line here and stick it to Russia, because Europe has more to lose, and the U.S. has very little to lose with that policy, and Europe will pull back from that. There will be more regional Scotlands. Banking instability will spread. Okay, China. There will be another mini stimulus, number three, in order to keep the economy from slowing even more. We've had the big stimulus, and then we had a mini stimulus in 2013, and another one coming this year. They'll do everything they can in China to prevent the growth rate from falling. currency, the yuan will be allowed currency rise that had something to do with the increased speculation by hedge funds and so forth in China destabilizing its financial system in recent years since 2012. That policy is being reversed, and we're going to see currency continue to drift lower in China, right? Because they need to stimulate economic growth once again and return to an export-driven growth. Exports are slipping, manufacturing is slipping in China. Therefore, they will allow their currency to decline again rather than allowing it to rise, which they did in previous years. Local banking instability and regional government instability will grow in China because of the bubbles with the shadow bankers and so forth since 2012 plowing into China. China's trying to deal with this problem. On one hand, to slow down the speculation and the shadow banks and destabilizing effects in the bubbles, and on the other hand, to keep the economy growing. And they've been shifting their policy back and forth. And each time they shift it, they either slow the economy and stabilize the financial system, or they grow the economy, which destabilizes the financial system. I think China will expand its recent BRIC banks initiative. Yuan trading in London will increase. They will continue to invest in European bonds and UK infrastructure. They will expand trade with Germany and the UK, closer ties with Europe, and closer ties in Latin America. These are all economic challenges to the U.S. In Japan, what we will see is another QE2, just as we've done QE2, 3, and 4 in the U.S. They won't raise taxes, another projected 2% because of the disastrous effect, but the economy will continue to stall. In Japan, up and down. Emerging markets, as interest rates do rise in the U.S., we're going to see more currency decline there, more capital flight. Exports will slow. This Argentine debt fight with the U.S. May have spillover effects. We'll wait to see what happens there. But emerging markets will continue to slow as advanced economies tend to recover. It's kind of like a seesaw effect going on. You know, as interest rates rise, capital flows out of these countries, emerging markets, Brazil and so forth, we saw last year, slows them down, and they respond by trying to protect their currency and reduce capital flight, and it's a back and forth kind of event between emerging markets and advanced economies, and that will continue. Okay, so those are my rough predictions here. For the past year and for the coming year, and I will I think I'll probably try to summarize them and post them on the Progressive Radio Network website here, so folks can look at what they were and what they will be. But again, if you want to read the articles about my predictions and related articles, go to my website, keyclosesproductions.com/articles, HTML. Okay, Jack Rasmus, and we'll be talking to you all next week, and hopefully this is going to be a pre-Labor Day show next week, and I'm going to bring back some of the union veterans to summarize this theme of labor at strategic impasse. What's happened over the past year? Is it getting better, getting worse? Okay, until next week, Alternative Visions.